Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, you're listening to On Israel in Al Monitor. I'm Ben Kaspit from Tel Aviv. Nothing is official. It's certainly not an option popular among the Likud party's wannabe future leaders. But Knesset member ניר ברקת, relatively unknown in the international arena, has managed to brand himself as the natural successor to Benjamin Netanyahu, if and when. ברקת is 63. He started out in high-tech, developing an antivirus software that was to eventually make him Israel's wealthiest politician. He served for 10 years as mayor of Jerusalem before moving on to national politics. ברקת is a symbol of Israeli success, photogenic, well-dressed, rich, and ambitious. Polls conducted among Likud members who will elect the next leader of Israel's largest party when the time comes, show ברקת leading well ahead of other candidates. His relationship with Netanyahu is a mixed bag. Netanyahu is naturally suspicious and ברקת is a worthy suspect. Nonetheless, the two men maintain reasonably cordial ties. Just before the 2020 elections, Netanyahu promised to make ברקת his finance minister. But when Netanyahu formed a new government with his rival Benny Gantz, ברקת did not get the job. It went instead to another Likud leadership contender, Israel Katz. ברקת, for the past year waiting patiently on the Knesset opposition benches, has not given up hope. He has been traveling the world, presenting an image of an assertive, glamorous figure in order to position himself in the best possible spot for the day when the Likud wakes up to the unbelievable fact that the Netanyahu era is over. ברקת is today's podcast guest. We'll speak with him about his just completed travel to the US and Ukraine, where his visit prompted raised eyebrows. We'll also ask him how he sees the future of a nuclear deal with Iran, about the anti-Israel BDS boycott campaign, about his ties with the Jewish communities in the United States, as well as his special connection with that country. ניר ברקת joins us right after this short break.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Hagedorn, and I'm the State Department correspondent at El Monitor.
And I'm Joe Snell. I'm El Monitor's video editor. Let's admit it, this past year has been difficult to stay on top of the news and sift through what's accurate and what's misleading. Let El Monitor help you.
If you care about the Middle East and North Africa, you should consider listening to El Monitor's audio series On the Middle East with Andrew Parasoliti and Amber and Zaman, and On Israel with Ben Kaspit. You can now watch our newest video podcast, Reading the Middle East with Gilles Kapel. You can subscribe to these series on your favorite podcast platforms.
And through a host of free daily and weekly newsletters, we offer a range of perspectives with the highest journalistic standards. You can subscribe to these newsletters at elmonitor.com.
As an award-winning media service headquartered in Washington, D.C., El Monitor has a network of over 160 contributors around the world.
So if you haven't done so already, be sure to visit elmonitor.com, where you can find all of these newsletters and podcasts, along with first-class reporting and analysis.
Now I'm privileged and happy to introduce and welcome to our podcast the former mayor of Jerusalem, senior Likud Knesset member ניר ברקת. Hi, ניר. Thank you for joining us here in On Israel in Al Monitor. Shalom, ניר.
Shalom, Ben. How are you?
Thanks. Let's start. You just came back or finished your journey in the United States of America. What was the purpose of this trip?
Well, there are three issues I raised Iran. Actually, I spoke to a few congressmen and senators about the threat, the strategic threat that we have from Iran. We're talking about a regime that wants to create a bomb in order to use it. They say it in their own language. They're basically saying that they want to destroy Israel. And so I was making the point that you don't make a deal with somebody that wants to take you out of business, somebody that wants to destroy Israel. What kind of an interim deal can you make with them? What we need to do is have no deal and focus on how we create a force that will threaten and deter Iran from trying to take their course of action and wipe out Israel. And this message is one of the most important messages that I conveyed in the United States.
You know, there is a... Not everybody in Israel agrees that a deal is the worst option. I'll give you an example. Your position is exactly like, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu in the Likud as a whole. And even the government of Israel, that a nuclear agreement between Israel and the world, of course, between Iran and the world powers is a strategic disaster. On the other hand, quite a few senior Israeli defense officials, intelligence officials, past and present, believe that an agreement is far better than allowing Iran to continue galloping toward nuclear weapons capability, which no one can or does not want to stop it right now. What do you tell them?
Well, I tell them that they're wrong, because eventually we're talking about the Middle East. We're talking about a regime that only power or fear that our armies, Israeli army and others, will take them down, that is the only thing that may deter them. You know, I want to add another threat that we have. If, God forbid, this agreement is signed and billions of dollars goes to Iran, they're going to use it to give it to terrorist regimes all over the world, especially around us. There are 250,000 rockets around Israel using proxies. And Iran, with their strong will to destroy us, and if now you give them billions of dollars extra, they will not stop stop creating a bomb. You know, unfortunately, this regime, this Islamic regime, is willing to lie, to send people to commit suicide. They will never stick to any agreement. Any agreement you sign with them, they will not stick to it from day one. So what's the point? Giving them more money, more ability to fund terrorist groups all over the world, not just to Israel. You know, what I basically said to the Americans, to our American friends, is that while we're the small Satan, the United States is the big Satan, according to the to this regime. So what's the point making a deal? You're fooling yourself, whoever thinks that the deal will stop them from creating a bomb.
The incumbent Israeli government has used several sophisticated maneuvers to delay and or prevent the deal with Iran. It successfully campaigned against Iran's demand to remove the Revolutionary Guards from the U.S. terror list, and now against its demand to bury international findings of its suspected nuclear military ambitions, the three open files. Can I assume you are willing to credit the current government with these achievements? And something else, I'll be happy to know what is your impression, because you just came back from Washington. Is these delays are here to stay? What are the chances of getting to this, the sides will reach this deal eventually, finally?
Well, I am concerned, but I see that there's no decision yet in the current administration in the United States. I'm concerned because I understand that, God forbid, if this deal does get signed, Israel is in big threat, and we must do everything we can to eliminate it. You know, I want to add one more thing. The Abraham Accords. The Abraham Accords are threatened by Iran because they see the bully in the Middle East called Iran threatening not just Israel, but also the moderate Arab states around it. Now, the more we align interests against Iran, the better the chances of expanding the Abraham Accords. If, God forbid, Iran becomes stronger, even the Abraham Accords could be at risk here. Because in the Middle East, you have to be bad with the bad guys and good with the good guys. And if you don't stick to that strategy, the good guys may fall apart. And this is something that people should understand. There's much at risk here. And only when Iran will be threatened that we will hit it militarily, may they be deterred from their action.
Only credible military option, like we're used to say. Let's go back to the United States. There's been a steady distancing in recent years between Israel and the most important congregations there, the Reform and the Conservative Jews. This is in large part of the result of policies adopted by your party leader. How do you see this turn of events? Is it appropriate for Israel to campaign against the Reform in order to politically appease the ultra-Orthodox? Where do you stand in this issue? Because I know you have solid roots, and we'll talk about it in America.
Well, mind you, remember that I was mayor of Jerusalem for 10 years. And what I've learned managing the most complex city in the world is you have to stick to what we call status quo. Status quo is not just accepting the situation as it is. My interpretation of status quo is you make social compromise for the benefit of living together. You don't convince somebody that he's wrong and you're right. You sort of think of how do you compromise and maintain status quo. I believe in status quo. I believe that we should set expectations for everyone to maintain status quo. It's not perfect for neither side. However, that philosophy of maintaining status quo is the right one. And this is something that we have to pitch to all people. Maintain status quo, because that's the best way to live together with compromise.
So how would you deal with the crisis, for example, around the Western Wall, that the Reform and the Orthodox got in certain moment in history? Netanyahu government voted and approved this compromise that they will have the far portion of this sacred wall, and then it was canceled.
Well, eventually you understand that there's disagreement, and status quo means that if you want to change things, you do it with agreement, with consent. And unfortunately, we have not yet reached that consent. But from my experiences, don't take a one-sided decision. Focus on cooperation. And if you don't change, that's also fine, because you're maintaining status quo. What I learned in my life as mayor of Jerusalem is that if you take action against another side, then you're going to get action against you back again, and eventually you end up with a status quo where you started. So I'm a big believer in status quo, and we should manage the expectations of people and not create expectations that cannot be accomplished by either side.
Okay, let's move to another issue. You are one of the leading fighters against the BDS campaign. How should Israel fight the BDS? It is doing enough on this front or not?
We have a lot of work to do. I believe that the right thing is focus on, people attack us as if though we are not, we have violations of human rights. However, we are by far the best democracy in the Middle East, by far maintaining freedom of religion, freedom of movement, freedom of press, and anything. And around us in our region, there are violations that are appalling. The world has to see and compare Israel to our region around us, and you'll understand that we will do everything we can to maintain human rights. And on the other hand, our adversaries and our unfortunately our enemies, they are 100 times worse. And if you really care about human rights, we should align interest with the with these organizations that care about human rights and focus on where the real problem is. And it's not in Israel. We are a very proud democracy, and compete with other democracies and human rights. And so I think the approach should be show and demonstrate not just what we're doing good, but also focus on where the real problems are. And many, many organizations in the world that care about human rights have to go to those BDS supporters and ask them, wait a minute, why are you attacking Israel? You should be attacking where the real problems are. That's one approach. The second approach is we have to use the social media. We're not doing a good job in working with our many, many partners around the world in social media and bypass all the traditional ways to communicate messaging. I think that's the future. And in social media, you'll find many, many people that are seeking the truth that we could use in order to fight and combat BDS.
Do you think most of BDS comes actually from anti-Semitism?
Certainly, you find a correlation between the two. Unfortunately, yes. And you also could find BDS connection to Hezbollah and terrorist groups that are funded by Iran and others. We could certainly see that the people creating the fake news and focusing on targeting Israel are politically motivated. Some of it is hate to Jews all over the world, and some of it is hate to Israel. And they're very certainly strongly linked together. I think the world understands that the BDS is a new way of anti-Semitism focusing on Israel.
Can you tell us, Nir Barkat, about your personal connection to the United States?
Well, I grew up, I spent 3 years in the States when I was a child. My father did his postdoctoral thesis in Pasadena in Caltech, and then in Ithaca in New York in Cornell. And so I learned to love and to appreciate the United States as a huge superpower. The majority of my business life as a high-tech entrepreneur, I did in the United States, and I understand how to do business with America and to appreciate the shared values that we have. I see, as practically all Israelis, the United States of America is the best partner we have. I believe that we should maintain and do a better job focusing on bipartisan issues and getting more bipartisan support in the United States. I understand how important this is, and I'm very happy to spend every few months. I come to the United States, to New York, to Washington, sometimes to the West Coast, to maintain the relationship and hear and listen and also speak to develop that relationship as much as we can.
Do you believe that the United States, maybe I'll ask this way, the American administration, current administration, Biden's administration is a devoted supporter of Israel? Because it's not a secret that Netanyahu did not have a good relationship with Democrat presidents, especially Barack Obama, and there is a gap between the support of the Republicans and what is going on between the Democrats and Israel, although this current government approved the situation. But what's your take on this issue?
Well, I think we all sides understand that strategically we have to be aligned. Sometimes, naturally, there are differences of opinions on some actions, but we have to look beyond that, and we have to realize that strategically long term we have to align interests. And even if there's some tension, it could be personal, it could be others, we all understand that we have to put that aside and focus on, as I believe we are, in aligning interest on security and intelligence. I think the United States and Israel have an amazing relationship. By the way, even with presidents that did not agree with our prime minister fully, we had full agreement on the technology and the security and on economics and exchanging technology and high tech and culture. So I think that we have to look at a broader picture, and I'm happy that Israel is such a great partner and the United States is such a great partner to Israel.
Hey, let's move to Ukraine. You stopped there on your way to the United States. Please tell us why.
Well, from day one in this unfortunate war, I believe personally that Israel should align interests with Ukraine and the Western world and the United States. This is my personal opinion. There are challenges. Ukraine is under, an invasion of a bully. And my belief is that the world should unite against bullies. If it's the invasion of Russia to Ukraine, and similarly, if it's the threat of Iran against Israel and the whole world using terror and trying to create a bomb. So the alignment here, my thought is that we have to align interests. And so I decided on the way to the United States to go and show my personal support and share with them some of my perspective as mayor of Jerusalem, being in a few times a city under fire, different kind of fire, but still some of the challenges that I have learned. And I went there to support. I met the head of the parliament. I met the mayor of Kiev. I was there invited by the chief rabbi of Ukraine and spent a lot of time with him, learning the challenges that the Jewish people have there. And there are challenges that we must help them. And so for me, it was to show my support and share that experience in the United States.
You've been severely critical of Israel's policy, which is not sufficiently pro-Ukrainian in your view. On the other hand, Israel, as you know, has an interest in preserving its relationship with Russia and the cooperation with the Russian army on our northern front. Don't you agree with what this government is trying to do? Walk a delicate balance between its support for Ukraine and a dependence on Russia for our fight against Iran's entrenchment in Syria and Lebanon.
You know, as a Jew, as an Israeli, certainly, of course, we'd like to maintain relationship with all parties if we could. In peacetime, it's probably possible, and I believe that we should, as much as we can, maintain relationship with all parties involved. However, eventually, when there's war, you cannot be neutral. You cannot be neutral and then expect the world not to be neutral when we need them. And therefore, you have to align and say to everyone, look, let's focus, strive for peace. But in this challenge, there's an oppressor here. There's an invasion here. And we have to be on the side of Ukraine. All Ukraine wants is to become more and more like us in the Western world. And if all countries would have taken only their interest, we would be in a big problem. So my perspective is when you take a global picture, that you have to align interests. And of course, every country has to come to some kind of way to help, which is a certain balance. But at the basics of this, we belong to the Western world. We belong to the alignment of the United States and the European Western world. That is our strategic partner, and we have to be with them.
Finally, we are facing election in Israel, November 1st. Do you believe in the chances of Likud, headed by Benjamin Netanyahu, to reach this goal of 61 mandates without being dependent on Benny Gantz and other guys, or other players in the political map? Do you think it is going to happen this time?
I do. Israel has many, many challenges. Security, economy, many reforms needed to dramatically upgrade our potential and our future. And only the Likud, headed by Netanyahu, can form a stable government that will last 4 years and take these challenges on successfully. Netanyahu is best suited to do that. We are more organized. However, now we have to get people out to vote. That is one of the biggest challenges we have. And I believe it's within reach. And I'm optimistic, working very hard. But I'm telling all the voters of the Likud, you have to bring your friends to vote Likud. Otherwise, we're not going to win. It's within reach. It's possible. We have to work very hard and win November 1st.
You, and this is my last question, in all the polls, in all the crowds, Likud members, general public, are the leading candidate to be the next leader of Likud. Of course, not challenging Netanyahu, but after, if and when Netanyahu will leave the political arena. Are you ready to be a prime minister in Israel?
It's not on the table right now, Ben. Right now,
let's part of
the
it.
Likud. No, loyalty in the Likud and the party I come from is key to the success of our future. And so I'm a loyal Likudnik, loyal to the elected leader, and it's not going to change. It's not going to change. We are working together, and I will do everything I can to help Netanyahu and my party win.
Former mayor of Jerusalem, Nir Barkat, senior Likud Knesset member, thank you very much for this conversation, for joining us here in Al Monitor. Toda rabba, Nir.
My honor and pleasure.
We'll be back right after this short break.
Hello, I'm Gilles Kepel, professor at Sciences Po and the Normal Sup in Paris, and author of a number of books and articles on the Middle East. Through my new podcast, Reading the Middle East, on the award-winning media service and Monitor, we will take a deep dive into the trends in the region with the authors and thought leaders who are shaping how we think about the Middle East. Reading the Middle East will be a fantastic addition to Al Monitor's outstanding podcast lineup, including On the Middle East with Andrew Parazziliti and Amber Inzamam, and On Israel with Ben Caspit. You can subscribe on your favorite listening platforms. We look forward to your joining our conversation.
Thank you for staying with us. Knesset member Nir Barkat, the leading candidate to be a next Likud leader if and when Benjamin Netanyahu quits politics, is actually speaking already as a prime minister. He's not going into politics or Israeli politics, but he's very confident in declaring that no nuclear deal with Iran will bring safety to Israel or the Middle East. He said that in his visit to the United States last week, he met senators and congressmen and spoke with them about it. He said that Iran is a state that declares loudly, clear and loud, that it wants to destroy Israel, to wipe Israel off the map. So what kind of a deal you do with such a state? And so is clear no to any deal. What we can do, or the world, or the international community, or the West, or the superpowers, is build a force that will deter Iran and stop the nuclear bomb. He said that the only language the Iranians understand is the language of deterrence and power, exactly like what happened in 2003. The only point in history when Iran suspended its nuclear developments when the Americans invaded Iraq. This is on the nuclear issue. When we spoke about terror, he mentioned that Israel is surrounded by 250,000 rockets. And I have to be honest, I never thought about this figure, because we analyze or assess that Hezbollah has got something like 150,000 rockets and missiles. By the way, I don't think many states in the world got this quantity of missiles. But I think Barkat puts into this figure the capabilities of Syria and Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah, etc. And when you take these 250,000 rockets, add to it the extra billions in his language that will boost the Iranian economy if the deal will be signed, you get a lot of trouble. And he told his American counterparts that signing a deal that will allow the Iranians to boost terror around Israel and in the Middle East is actually like fooling yourselves. I asked him about his opinion or impression after the talks in Washington about the situation of the current situation of the negotiation with Iran, and he said that he thinks that no decision was taken yet, not by the Americans and not by the Iranians, but he is still very, very concerned. Another interesting point he mentioned is that if the deal will be signed and Iran will be strengthened, so the Abraham Accords will be threatened and will be at risk. And this is another reason to Barkat's opinion that it must not be signed. In Israeli politics, he said whatever they have to say in the Likud, that he is confident that Benjamin Netanyahu is able to, this time, in a fifth try, to reach the 61 mandates goal. And Likud is the only party that can form a stable government in Israel and take Israel to the next era, because five campaigns in 2.5 years is something that even Lebanon, and this is something I say, can't afford. I hope you found this conversation interesting, and I think we will meet here after the Jewish holidays. Meantime, thank you very much for listening. Take care and bye-bye.